Succession number 10012, reel number 10.
Mr. Clayton, reel 10. Talking about this film that you saw where you met the King of the Belgians, what sort of film was it?
Well, Pearl, P-A-U-L, Pearl White, with a star in it. But I think it was a sort of a... Well, I don't know if I could tell you much about what the film was about. It's gone now, but... She was a leading actress at that time, Pearl White was.
Was that sort of film appreciated by the troops?
I think it was an American film, and Pearl White would be an American actress, film actress.
Did the troops enjoy that sort of film? Did you enjoy it?
Well, I suppose you got all kinds, and you just... you could please yourself when you stopped in, you went out. But the King of Belgium... was it at one film show I was at. He was sitting in a box, and I think there was two or three big nubs with him, and we got tea and cake, the compliments of the King of Belgium. And it was something to get a piece of cake, I may tell you, at that time.
Did you ever see any films about the war, any of the documentaries, or like the Battle of the Somme film? Did you ever see any of those films?
Any of those films?
Actually,
the Battle of the Somme?
Actually made at the time. Did you see them while you were out in the front?
No, I never saw any photographs being taken of the by any pressmen or anything like that. No, I couldn't say that they did. I never did.
Did you have much sport when you were out of the line? What sort of games would you play?
Well, there was Ludo and there was checkers, and if you were out of the range of the shellfire, there was football matches. Sometimes one number of men would be picked for one side and another man from maybe the next hut, you see. There were 13, made a team. Oh, yes, we played football. And, there was... it was... They did occasionally get a nutshell, but maybe you'd go for weeks and never get one at all. Out of range, you know, out of the usual range.
Did you ever have a sports day? Did you ever take part in any sports day, you know, where they have races, track events, that sort of thing? Was that ever organised for you?
No, there wasn't much in the way. There was really just football. That's about the only game I can remember.
But it
was organised by the men. The officers didn't... Although, there was one time the men played the officers. I guess, see, officers versus the sappers. And the officers won. They beat the sappers. I remember that. Yes.
Were you playing?
I was playing. I was a fullback, a left fullback. Yes.
Did you ever have any concert parties? You know.
Oh yes, yes. I've heard some good singing, and often that was there was a Canadian contingent, and they were billeted near us. That would be. About 8 or 10 miles behind the front line. And they used to get good concert parties. And you heard some really good singing. And there was some of them Australian officers that were good singers. I know there was in that concert party. But it was a Canadian contingent, you know, it was out there. And had some good singers there.
What about comics?
Beg your pardon?
Did they have any comics? What other acts would they have?
Comics?
Yeah. What other acts would they have?
Well, there was singing, and then there was, I suppose some would give the experience was up. And they could always say the funny side of anything, you know. There was comedy even in the front line trenches, you know. When you met one another, how do you do, jock, you know. If he was a Scotsman, he was always a jock. And when North Country men, Durham and Northumberland, they were Geordies. That's they'll meet you, they recognise the dialect, you know, like me. And, well, how do you do, Geordie? How are you getting on?
What about leave? Did you get leave?
Oh, leave, I was out at 12 months. And we never got leave before we went to France. You see, we were urgently wanted for France. A fortnight after leaving me walk at the collieries at the Charlie Pit, I was in the front line trenches along with others that had volunteered along with us. There was 200 of us left Chatham in June 1915. And out of them 200, when I was wounded, there was 27 left.
When did you get your first leave then?
I went out in June. It'll be June the following year, 15-16. I got my first. It's 7 days. That included your travelling time. You've got 4 days at home out of the seven. There was a 7 days leave, but as it went on, it was lengthened. You know, I think it got to 14 days. I think the last one I had was a 14-day leave.
What did you do on your leave?
Well, come home as soon as you could get. That's where you wanted to be. And you got into London, where there was a lot of some colonial troops, you know. There wasn't time to send them back to Canada or America or New Zealand or Australia, where they'd come from. But they usually used to take the leave in London. Now, I think at that time, London was the wickedest city in the world. There was these prostitutes, you couldn't call them anything else. The waiting of these fellas that had no friends and nowhere to go to, and they would give them accommodation, do you see? And but I thought they were badly catered for. I think the colonial troops, when they got to London, they were left to make the best of it there, as far as I could see. And, I suppose maybe some of them was looking for that kind of thing, but I thought it was a great temptation to put on a young chap. The way they were stranded in London, and I came away with the idea that was the... I'd never seen anything as wicked. To me, it was... I thought there should have been somebody done about it. There was such a number of these women looking for a man, because they knew he got a good sum, you know, to come on leave with. And that's just what they were after. Yeah.
What did you do when you got back to Stanley?
Well, I went to my friends and relations when I got my leave, and I went to Newcastle and had my photograph taken. A lot of my old pals was away, but the relations mainly, some of them had been killed, quite a few were good. Oh, I know one family I was very friendly with, three of the sons. Hunter was their name. There was Ernest, Peter, and Vander. Vander, that was his name, Vander Hunter. I never heard that name before or since. But anyhow, they were all killed, but they were killed in the Dardanelles. There was one drowned. When they landed at the Dardanelles, you know, they got them as far to the shore as they could, but there wasn't any landing in there. They just had to wade, and they had the full pack and rifle, and a lot of them, the waves upset them, and they were drowned. They never got ashore. Now, the brother was in the Dardanelles. I wasn't there, but he was in the naval division. It was both now both sailors and soldiers. And he did his training at the Crystal Palace. That's, aye.
Did you, you mentioned earlier that people would extend their leave a bit. Did you do that?
Oh, yes, yes. I remember I once got a couple of days put under mine at the right of the NCO, or wired to him or something, but I got word back. I was gone at 40 days, 48 hours extra leave. That was 2 days.
What excuse did you give?
Eh?
What reason did you give for needing it?
My brother had arrived from the Dardanelles, and he was able to get leave at the same time as me, and I wanted to see him, and I told him that it was that I had a brother that I hadn't seen for a year or two, and I was enjoying his company. It was accepted anyhow.
So it wasn't really an excuse, it was a real reason.
It was a reason, yes, yes.
Now, when you got back, I want now to move on to when you were on the Somme. You mentioned we've dealt with the time when you were at New Chapelle digging the chalk dugouts.
Yes.
I want now to move on to when you were at the Somme and you were put on roads, building roads. How did you go about building those roads? Were you still involved in the actual day-to-day, or were you now in the
mess? I think the road building was mainly in the Ypres salient. We made dugouts on the Somme. Dugouts, constructed dugouts, you know. We're tunneling down, where sometimes we'd be down 100 feet and made a dugout out of that. And there were some of the big dugouts that were eventually that were fitted up with electric light. There was a generator. It was I don't know whether it was run by petrol or run on paraffin oil or what it was, but it was both the motor, you know, that, and then there was a belt on it under the dynamo, and it lit this big dugout up. It was all wired out eventually. Of course, that took time, but that was an.
Is this what you were working on in 1916 and the winter? Was this what you were working on in the winter of 1916-17?
Yes, I think it was, yes. Yes, and, one of the troubles there is to put gas over, gas shells. And, it was what they call mustard gas. That was the worst gas. And they would often throw them shells over at night time. And then you would woke up with a smell. It used to enter the dugouts, you know. And you had to get your respirator on. Well, many times I thought I didn't know which was worse, having the respirator on or having the gas, because the respirators were most uncomfortable, I'll tell you, especially if you had to keep them on for some hours, you know. And that has happened. And this was a deadly gas. And it used to get into your clothing, especially around the neck where those clothes fitting. And it would, sear the skin off your neck, you know, where your collar band, if your tunic would be scrubbing it, you know. Yes. It was, and many times we used to say we didn't know which was the worst, the gas or the effects that it had upon you.
You weren't in the front line at all then while you were at the Somme. You were always behind digging these dugouts.
There's some things were in the front line.
What were you doing?
Oh, yes, the first shaft we put down, that was that took us up to the Hooge.
When you were on the Somme, I mean.
Oh, on the Somme. Oh, it was mainly constructing roads there. Yes, we were. We weren't in the front line. If there was a front line, it was a different kind of warfare altogether. Because there wasn't trenches constructed, you know. The trenches were behind it. We'd advanced there, and when the territory that was plenty of shell holes, but, well, you had to make do with a shell hole. That's where you had to take cover in.
So on the Somme, you were digging dugouts and you were making roads. That's right, is it?
Yes, and on the Somme we made dugouts there on the Somme.
And what about the road building? How did you go about
that? Oh, the road building, that was mainly in Ypres salient. There was a lot of mining companies that joined up to what they call the Messines Ridge. Now,
so this is into 1917 you went up to?
Oh, it used to be 17.
Yeah. Okay, let's look
and
at that then.
Let's see now. 1917. Yes, well, there was a big offensive being planned. And it was to commence with a huge explosion. And a lot of different mining companies, we were one company, and there was several both left and right of us, they were to tunnel. In fact, we were a mile past the German front line.
So you went back to the Berlin Tunnel, did you?
Yes, it was in that direction. But that was blown up when the Messines battle began. But you see, round about that area, it was all flat. And continuous shell fire. It smashed all the drainage system up. It was really a quagmire. And our job was really to make roads or footpaths for the troops to walk on, you know, in and out.
How did you do it?
Well, there was always plenty of bully beef in these tins of bully beef. There was about 144 tins, I think, in a box. And there was strong hardwood box that they were put in. We used to put them down. And they sank down about a couple of foot, they say. And then one end of that, wait till we got a good hard footpath to walk on. That was some of the footpaths we made for the troops to walk on. And that road was constructed mainly by bully beef boxes, that the bully beef was boxed in. You see, these tins of bully beef, they'll be about a pound, I would think, and as far as I can remember, I'm not sure the weight of them, but we'll say a pound. And now maybe about, the tins would be about 6 inches by 3 inches square, you see, and that was the bully beef. And there would be about 144 of them tins in about these boxes, and they were made of a hardwood. Well, we used to put them down, and they made a good foundation for a footpath for the troops to walk up and down, because they were about, where they'd be about a yard by 2 feet, I would think. That would be about the size of the boxes. But we made footpaths with them.
So the bully beef boxes. The footpath would be a yard wide, would it?
Was it protected with wire?
You'd put them down so that the footpath was a yard wide, not 2 feet wide, would you?
Yes, that was the way, yes. It was all like swamped. And it was easy to dig out. It was like very soft, you know, with the water. But it made a good improvised footpath for the troops to walk up and down on.
Would you put anything on top of the boxes, or would they just walk on the boxes?
We just walked on the box tops. Yes, we didn't put anything on top of them. They may have been done later on, you know, but they made a jolly good road. Because that was a problem.
What about roads for bigger traffic, not just troops? Did you make any proper roads?
No, I wouldn't say that apart from that. Oh, yes, we made roads that would carry the guns and carry the ammunition for the guns.
How did you go about that?
Well, how to go about that, and yet we've been on it. Well, we had to level it up, the force, and then we could always find where there's a place where there was stone, maybe there was an old quarry or something, you know, get and plant broken stone. That used to make a carriageway for the ambulances to run and for the ammunition to go up for the big guns, and the big guns themselves used to travel up and down it.
And that's all you remember about the roads, building the roads, is it?
Well, at the moment, I think so. It's going back a long time now, you know.
It is. Were you actually there when the Messines Ridge was blown up?
I was on Camel Hill. We knew about it. We'd heard about it, that it would go up at 4 o'clock in the morning. So Camel Hill, it was a hill very in the Ypres was salient. It was a high ground. And I got up, and a brother of mine as well, we were two of us in an advanced dugout up there. And we got up and we went to Camel Hill. That was the highest point there was in that part of the salient. And it was exploded there about 4 o'clock in the morning. But it wasn't only our company's mines that went up. There were several mining companies, but they were all concentrating on the Messines Ridge. And the infantry, after that explosion, they made an advance. But I couldn't say it was a success, but they did make an advance. Because I've been in the German dugouts after that, pillboxes they called them. They didn't call them dugouts, they called them pillboxes. And now there were really a better protection, I thought, from the shell fire than what we had. Ours was mainly sandbags filled and flattened out, you know, laid one on top of another. Then we used to get some tree trunks or something to make a roof, and then there'd be another lot of sandbags. And then another lot of tree trunks and sandbags on top of that. That did sort of make a good protection from the German shells, you know.
Why were theirs better then? What was better about the German dugouts?
All the German dugouts was concrete. Concrete, sir. And they say the most of that, I've read since, that the most of that cement, it came from England, but was exported to Holland, you see, for the Dutch to use. But the Dutch were just passing it through. I expect they'll make some profit out of that to supply the Germans with cement. And there was a lot of their dugouts was made with English cement that it came from England, and that's how they got it.
Did you know that at the time, or did you just read
about it? Oh, we didn't know that. I read about that afterwards. But their dugouts was much better than ours. And the most of them concrete dugouts that they had a machine going in. And you see, if it was late, and at night time, you know, they used to, the fire flares up. We both had flares, and the Germans had flares. And that, it used to light all the surrounding up, you know, like a sort of a firework it was, but it was a good illumination. Then it blopped out, you know. And it wasn't very long before another went up. That went up, that went all on all night until daybreak the next day for illumination in case the Germans was coming forward. Oh, we were going forward to them. We both had them, but the Germans were much brighter light than what ours was. We used to always say, yes, they made a better illumination.
This Messines mine, had you Had you been involved in actually preparing it? I mean, I know you'd been involved in digging it, but did you actually help lay the mine?
No, I just... The machines, mine. Oh, yes. Yes, we took part in that, the machines, mine. And then there were several other mining companies.
How did you go about laying that site? Because you've told me how you laid small mines and the Hooge mine, but this was much bigger. How did you go about packing it all in and everything? Were you involved in
well,
that?
Well, I think that there'll be a shaft sunk first. And then the explosives would be laid. And then it would be the stem. It's a stop a blowback. You see, if you want to lift the surface, you've got to have a weight to stop it for a blowback. You want to lift the top. And, well, that meant carrying... Well, he did it with a lot of sandbags. The sandbags were used for lots of things out in that war. And we used to pack that up in timber, of course, we had in tray trunks, anything we would get that would stop it for blowing back, you know. And then it had to lift. And I was on Camel Hill when the blow machines went.
Did you actually see it?
Eh?
Could you actually see it from there, what happened?
We couldn't see it. It was 4 o'clock in the morning when it was blown up. It was just breaking daylight.
Could you hear it or feel it through the ground?
Oh, we felt it. Oh, it was. I read it in the newspapers where that machine's ridge, when it was blown up, it was felt in Kent. I read that. We used to sometimes, a few days old, or maybe a week or two old, who will get it. Somebody will get a newspaper from England. And I read it where that explosion, it was felt in Kent.
So you felt
right away from the machine's ridge in Belgium.
So you felt it at Kemmel then?
Eh?
You certainly felt it at Kemmel.
Who started it?
You certainly felt it at Kemmel. You felt it through the ground.
Oh, yes, we could feel it in the ground. It shook the ground. It was... Well, there wasn't only one mine up. It was all time to go up at 4 o'clock in the morning. That was the preliminary to the infantry attack, you know. After the explosion, the infantry men went over to make an attack. And I couldn't say it was a success, but they went forward.
You told me, yeah. Now, during this time, when did you start working in the officers' mess? When had you started doing that?
Oh, well, after I'd been out there a while, the sergeant coming to me, he says, I've got a job for you. I said, what job is that? He says, officer servant. Well, I said, what does that mean? Well, he says, you'll have to clean his buttons and you'll probably have to make his breakfast and make his meals for him and make his bed for him. Oh, well, I says, I'll go. So I was sent to John Warnock, Captain John Warnock he was. He got the military cross as well. He was a Scotsman. He was a civil engineer in Glasgow. he was working for the Glasgow Corporation is a civil engineer.
Did that mean you weren't working with the rest of the company now? Or was that extra?
Oh, no, we were excused at tunneling when we were on with that job. I was excused and several others. Of course, every officer had a servant, or batman, as you used to call them, a batman.
And when did you start doing that, do you think?
Oh, I think it would be about a couple of years after I'd been out in there.
So, after the Somme, into 1917 then?
It would be about 17, I think, when I was made a batman, yes.
Now, they told you, what did you actually do for Warnock then? Was it as you'd been told? Was it as you'd been told that you had to do?
No, you just learned there was already some officers had servants and they would give you a bit, You muck together, you know. The officers was on their own. We were on our own. Most of us would sleep in a big dugout, and we were, it was just occupied by officers' batmen, you see. So we helped one another out. We had to try to get hot water for them to shave with. And, well, that was sometimes wasn't an easy thing to do, you know. But we it's surprising what you could do, not what you did do. Yes. Oh, we, you know, dugouts. Well, I've been in dugouts where we made an improvised fireplace. We there was bricks sometimes that come on us, smashed up hoses, you know, and you could get plenty of bricks. Even though there was trenches among them bricks, it's surprising what you could do with them when you gathered them up and got them into your dugouts, which, as I say, we made fireplaces out of them. I was in a good dugout one time, and there was a bug.